but there wasn't very much about the terrace religion either.
Not much, says it agreed. But truly and regretfully, not much is far more than we knew previously. I am only worried that I will not have an opportunity to pass this information on. I have sent a translated copy of the logbook to a location where my brethren and sister keepers will know to check. It will be a pity if this new knowledge were to die with me.
It won't, Vin said.
Oh?
Has my lady suddenly become an optimist?
Has my terraceman suddenly become a smart mouth? Vin retorted.
He always has been, I think, Sazed said with a slight smile. It is one of the things that made him a poor steward, at least in the eyes of most of his masters.
Then they must have been fools, Vin said honestly.
So I was inclined to think, mistress, Sazed replied.
We should return to the mansion. We should not be seen out in the gardens when the mists arrive, I think. I'm just going back out into them. There are many of the grounds staff that do not know you are mistborn, mistress, Sazed said. It would be a good secret to keep, I think.
I know, Vin said, turning. Let's go back, then. A wise plan.
They walked for a few moments, enjoying the eastern garden's subtle beauty. The grasses were kept carefully trimmed, and they had been arranged in pleasant tiers, the occasional shrubbery giving accent. The southern garden was far more spectacular, with its brook, trees, and exotic plants. But the eastern garden had its own peace, the serenity of simplicity.
Sazed, Vin said in a quiet voice.
Yes, mistress?
It's all going to change, isn't it?
What specifically do you mean?
Everything, Vin said.
Even if we aren't all dead in a year, the crew members will be off working on other projects. Ham will probably be back with his family. Dox and Kelsier will be planning some new escapade. Clubs will be renting his shop to another crew. Even these gardens that we've spent so much money on, they'll belong to someone else.
Sazed nodded.
What you say is likely. Though, if things go well, perhaps the Ska Rebellion will be ruling Luthadel by this time next year.
Maybe, Vin said. But even still, things will change.
That is the nature of all life, mistress, Sazed said. The world must change.
I know, Vin said with a sigh. I just wish... Well, I actually like my life now, Sazed. I like spending time with the crew, and I like training with Kelsier. I love going to balls with Elland on the weekends, love walking in these gardens with you. I don't want these things to change. I don't want my life to go back to the way it was a year ago.
It doesn't have to, mistress, Sazed said. It could change for the better.
It won't, Vin said quietly. It's starting already.
Kelsier has hinted that my training is almost finished. When I practice in the future, I'll have to do it alone. As for Elland, he doesn't even know that I'm Ska, and it's my job to try and destroy his family. Even if House Venture doesn't fall by my hand, others will bring it down. I know Chanelario is planning something, and I haven't been able to discover anything about her schemes. That's only the beginning, though. We face the final empire. We'll probably fail. To be honest, I don't see how things could possibly turn out otherwise. We'll fight, we'll do some good, but we won't change much. And those of us who survive will spend the rest of our lives running from the Inquisitors. Everything's going to change, Sazed. And I can't stop it.
Sazed smiled fondly.
Then, mistress, he said quietly, simply enjoy what you have. The future will surprise you, I think.
Maybe, Vin said, unconvinced.
Ah, you just need to have hope, mistress. Perhaps you've earned a little bit of good fortune. There were a group of people before the ascension known as the Astalsai. They claimed that each person was born with a certain finite amount of ill luck, and so, when an unfortunate event happened, they thought themselves blessed. Thereafter, their lives could only get better.
Vin raised an eyebrow. Sounds a bit simple-minded to me.
I do not believe so, Sazed said. Why, the Astalsai were rather advanced. They mixed religion with science quite profoundly. They thought that different colors were indications of different kinds of fortune, and were quite detailed in their descriptions of light and color. Why, it's from them that we get some of our best ideas as to what things might have looked like before the Ascension. They had a scale of colors, and used it to describe the sky of the deepest blue and various plants in their shades of green. Regardless, I find their philosophies regarding luck and fortune enlightened. To them, a poor life was only a sign of fortune to come. It might be a good fit for you, mistress. You could benefit from the knowledge that your luck cannot always be bad.
I don't know, Vin said skeptically. I mean, if your bad luck were limited, wouldn't your good luck be limited too? Every time something good happened, I'd be worried about using it all up.
Sazed said. I suppose that depends on your viewpoint, mistress.
How can you be so optimistic? Vin said. You and Kelsey are both.
I don't know, mistress, Sazed said. Perhaps our lives have been easier than yours. Or perhaps we are simply more foolish.
Vin fell silent. They walked for a short time longer, weaving their way back toward the building, but not rushing the walk.
Sazed, she finally said, when you saved me that night in the rain, you used ferrochemy, didn't you?
Sazed nodded.
Indeed. The Inquisitor was very focused on you, and I was able to sneak up behind him, then hit him with a stone. I had grown many times stronger than a regular man, and my blow threw him into the wall, breaking several of his bones, I suspect.
Is that it? Vin asked.
You sound disappointed, mistress, Sazed noted, smiling. You expected something more spectacular, I suppose?
Vin nodded.
It's just, you've been so quiet about ferrochemy. That makes it seem more mystical, I guess.
Sazed sighed. There is really little to hide from you, mistress. The truly unique power of ferrochemy, the ability to store and recover memories, you must surely have already guessed. The rest of the powers are not different, really, from the powers granted to you by Pewter and Tin. A few of them are a little more odd, making a ferrochemist heavier or changing his age, but they offer little martial application.
Age? Vin said, perking up. You could make yourself younger?
Not really, mistress, Sazed said. Remember, a ferrochemist must draw his powers from his own body. He could, for instance, spend a few weeks with his body aged to the point that it felt and looked 10 years older than he really was. Then he could withdraw that age to make himself seem 10 years younger for an equal amount of time. However, in ferrochemy, there must be a balance.
Vin thought about that for a moment.
Does the metal you use matter? She asked, like in allomancy?
Most certainly, Sazed said. The metal determines what can be stored.
Vin nodded and continued to walk, thinking over what he'd said.
Sazed, can I have a bit of your metal? She finally asked.
My metal, mistress?
Something you've used as a ferrochemical store, Vin said. I want to try burning it. Maybe that will let me use some of its power.
Sazed frowned curiously. Has anyone ever tried it before?
I'm sure someone must have, Sazed said. But I honestly can't think of a specific example. Perhaps if I were to go search my memory copper mines.
Why not just let me try it now? Vin asked. Do you have something made from one of the basic metals? Something you haven't stored anything too valuable in?
Sazed paused, then reached up to one of his oversized earlobes and undid an earring much like the one Vin wore. He handed the earring's tiny backing, used to hold the earring in place, to Vin.
"It is pure pewter, mistress. I have stored a moderate amount of strength in it."
Vin nodded, swallowing the tiny stud. She felt at her allomantic reserve, but the stud's metal didn't seem to do anything different. She tentatively burned pewter.
"Anything?" Sazed asked.
Vin shook her head.
"No, I don't."
She trailed off.
"There was something there, something different."
"What is it, mistress?"
Sazed asked, uncharacteristic eagerness sounding in his voice.
"I can feel the power, Saze. It's faint, far beyond my grasp, but I swear that there's another reserve within me, one that only appears when I'm burning your metal."
Sazed frowned.
"It's faint, you say? Like you can see a shadow of the reserve, but can't access the power itself?"
Vin nodded.
"How do you know?"
"That's what it feels like when you try to use another ferrochemist's metals, mistress," Sazed said, sighing. "I should have suspected this would be the result. You cannot access the power, because it does not belong to you."
"Oh,"
Vin said.
"Do not be too disappointed, mistress. If allomancers could steal strength from my people, it would already be known. It was a clever thought, however."
He turned, pointing toward the mansion.
"The carriage has already arrived. We are late for the meeting, I think."
Vin nodded, and they hurried their pace toward the mansion.
"Funny," Kelsier thought to himself as he slipped across the darkened courtyard before Mansion Renew. "I have to sneak into my own house as if I were attacking some nobleman's keep." There was no avoiding it, however, not with his reputation. Kelsier the thief had been distinctive enough. Kelsier the rebellion instigator and Ska spiritual leader was even more infamous. That didn't, of course, keep him from spreading his nightly chaos. He just had to be more careful. More and more families were pulling out of the city, and the powerful houses were growing increasingly paranoid. In a way, that made manipulating them easier, but sneaking around their keeps was getting very dangerous. In comparison, Mansion Renew was virtually unprotected. There were guards, of course, but no mistings. Renew had to keep a low profile. Too many allomancers would make him stand out. Kelsier kept to the shadows, carefully making his way around to the east side of the building. Then he pushed off a coin and guided himself up onto Renew's own balcony. Kelsier landed lightly, then peeked through the glassy balcony doors. The drapes were shut, but he could pick out Dotson, Vin, Sazed, Ham, and Breeze, standing around Renew's desk. Renew himself sat in the far corner of the room, staying out of the proceedings. His contract included playing the part of Lord Renew, but he didn't wish to be involved in the plan any more than he had to. Kelsier shook his head.
"It would be far too easy for an assassin to get in here. I'll have to make sure that Vin continues to sleep at Clubs's shop."
He wasn't worried about Renew. The Chondra's nature was such that he didn't need to fear an assassin's blade. Kelsier tapped lightly on the door, and Dachshund strolled over, pulling it open.
"And he makes his stunning entry," Kelsier announced, sweeping into the room, throwing back his mist cloak. Dachshund snorted, shutting the doors.
"You're truly a wonder to behold, Kel, particularly the soot stains on your knees."
"I had to do some crawling tonight," Kelsier said, waving an indifferent hand. "There's an unused drainage ditch that passes right under Keep Lical's defensive wall. You'd think they'd get that patched up."
"I doubt they need worry," Breeze said from beside the desk. "Most of you Mistborn are probably too proud to crawl. I'm surprised you were willing to do so yourself."
"Too proud to crawl?" Kelsier said. "Nonsense. Why, I'd say that we Mistborn are too proud not to be humble enough to go crawling about.
In a dignified manner, of course.
Doxon frowned, approaching the desk.
Kel, that doesn't make any sense.
We Mistborn need not make sense, Kelsier said haughtily. What's this?
From your brother, Doxon said, pointing at a large map laid across the desk. It arrived this afternoon in the hollow of a broken table leg that the Canton of Orthodoxy hired clubs to repair.
Interesting, Kelsier said, scanning the map.
It's a list of the soothing stations, I assume.
Indeed, Breeze said. It's quite the discovery. I've never seen such a detailed, carefully drawn map of the city. Why, it not only shows every one of the 34 soothing stations, but also locations of Inquisitor activity, as well as places that the different cantons are concerned about. I haven't had the opportunity to associate much with your brother, but I must say that the man is obviously a genius.
It's almost hard to believe he's related to Kel, eh?
Doxon said with a smile. He had a notepad before him, and was in the process of making a list of all the soothing stations. Kelsier snorted.
Marsh might be the genius, but I'm the handsome one.
What are these numbers?
Inquisitor raids and dates, Ham said. You'll notice that Vin's crew house is listed.
Kelsier nodded.
How in the world did Marsh manage to steal a map like this?
He didn't, Doxon said as he wrote.
There was a note with the map. Apparently High Prelins gave it to him. They've been very impressed with Marsh, and wanted him to look over the city and recommend locations for new soothing stations. It seems that the Ministry is a bit worried about the House War, and they want to send out some extra soothers to try and keep things under control.
We're supposed to send the map back inside the repaired table leg, Sazed said. Once we are done this evening, I shall endeavor to copy it in as short a time as possible.
And memorize it as well, thereby making it part of every keeper's record, Kelsier thought. The day when you'll stop memorizing and start teaching is coming soon, Saze. I hope your people are ready.
Kelsier turned, studying the map. It was as impressive as Breeze had said. Indeed, Marsh must have taken an extremely great risk in sending it away. Perhaps a foolhardy risk, even. But the information it contained... We'll have to get this back quickly, Kelsier thought. Tomorrow morning, if possible.
What is this? Vin asked quietly, leaning across the large map and pointing.
She wore a noblewoman's dress, a pretty one-piece garment that was only slightly less ornate than a ball gown. Kelsier smiled. He could remember a time when Vin had looked frighteningly awkward in a dress, but she seemed to have taken an increasing liking to them. She still didn't move quite like a noble-born lady. She was graceful, but it was the dexterous grace of a predator, not the deliberate grace of a courtly lady. Still, the gowns seemed to fit Vin now. In a way, they had nothing at all to do with tailoring.
Ah, mare, Kelsier thought. You always wanted a daughter you could teach to walk the line between noblewoman and thief.
They would have liked each other. They both had a hidden streak of unconventionality. Perhaps if his wife were still alive, she could have taught Vin things about pretending to be a noblewoman that even Sazed didn't know.
Of course, if Mare were still alive, I wouldn't be doing any of this. I wouldn't dare.
Look, Vin said. One of these Inquisitor dates is new. It's marked as yesterday.
Doxon shot a glance at Kelsier.
We would have had to tell her eventually anyway.
That was Theron's crew, Kelsier said. An Inquisitor hit them yesterday evening.
Vin paled.
Should I recognize that name?
Ham asked.
Theron's crew was part of the team that was trying to dupe the Ministry with Cayman, Vin said.
This means they probably still have my trail.
The Inquisitor recognized her that night when we infiltrated the palace. He wanted to know who her father was. It's fortunate that those inhuman things make the nobility uncomfortable. Otherwise, we'd have to worry about sending her to balls.
Theron's crew, Vin said. Was it like last time?
Doxson nodded.
No survivors.
There was an uncomfortable silence, and Vin looked visibly sick.
Poor kid, Kelsier thought.
There was little they could do but move on, though.
All right, how are we going to use this map?
It has some ministry notes on house defenses, Ham said. Those will be useful.
There doesn't appear to be any pattern in the Inquisitor hits, however, Breeze said. They probably just go where the information leads them.
We'll want to refrain from being too active near soothing stations, Doc said, lowering his pen. Fortunately, Clubs' shop isn't close to any specific station. Most of them are in the slums.
We need to do more than just avoid the stations, Kelsier said. We need to be ready to take them out.
Breeze frowned.
If we do, we risk playing our hand recklessly.
But think of the damage it would do, Kelsier said. Marsh said there were at least 3 soothers and a seeker at every one of these stations. That's 130 ministry mistings. They must have recruited across the entire central dominance to gather those kinds of numbers. If we were to take them all out at once...
We'd never be able to kill that many ourselves, Doxson said.
We could if we used the rest of our army, Ham said. We've got them stashed throughout the slums.
I have a better idea, Kelsier said. We can hire other thieving crews. If we had 10 crews, each assigned to take out 3 stations, we could clear the city of ministry soothers and seekers in barely a few hours.
We'd have to discuss timing, though, Doxson said. Breeze is right. Killing that many obligators in one evening means making a major commitment. It won't take the Inquisitors long to retaliate.
Kelsier nodded.
You're right, Dox. Timing will be vital.
Would you look into it? Find some appropriate crews, but wait until we decide on a time before giving the locations of the soothing stations.
Doxson nodded.
Good, Kelsier said. Speaking of our soldiers, Ham, how are things going with them?
Better than I expected, actually, Ham said. They went through training in the caves, and so they're fairly competent. And they consider themselves the more faithful segment of the army since they didn't follow Yeadon to battle against your will.
Breeze snorted.
That's a convenient way of looking past the fact that they lost 3/4 of their army in a tactical blunder.
They're good men, Breeze, Ham said firmly. And so were those who died. Don't speak ill of them. Regardless, I worry about hiding the army as we are. It won't be too long before one of the teams gets discovered.
That's why none of them know where to find the others, Kelsier said.
I do want to mention something about the men, Breeze said, seating himself in one of Renew's desk chairs. I see the importance of sending Hammond to train the soldiers, but honestly, what is the reason for forcing Doxson and myself to go and visit them?
The men need to know who their leaders are, Kelsier said. If Ham were to become indisposed, someone else will need to take command.
Why not you? Breeze asked.
Just bear with me, Kelsier said, smiling. It's for the best. Breeze rolled his eyes.
Bear with you. We seem to do an awful lot of that.
Anyway, Kelsier said, Vin, what news from the nobility? Have you discovered anything useful about House Venture? She paused.
No.
But the ball next week will be at Keep Venture, right?
Doxson asked. Vin nodded. Kelsier eyed the girl. Would she even tell us if she knew? She met his eyes, and he couldn't read a thing in them. Blasted girl's far too experienced a liar.
All right, he said to her. Keep looking.
I will, she said.
Despite his fatigue, Kelsier found sleep elusive that night. Unfortunately, he couldn't go out and roam the hallways. Only certain servants knew he was at the mansion, and he needed to keep a low profile now that his reputation was building. His reputation. He sighed as he leaned against the balcony railing, watching the mists. In a way, the things he did worried even him. The others didn't question him out loud, as per his request, but he could tell that they were still bothered by his growing fame.
It's the best way. I may not need all of this, but if I do, I'm going to be glad I went to the trouble.
A soft knock came at his door. He turned, curious, as Sazed peeked his head into the room.
"I apologize, Master Kelsier," Sazed said. "But a guard came to me and said he could see you up on your balcony. He was worried that you'd give yourself away."
Kelsier sighed, but backed away from the balcony, pulling the doors closed and shutting the drapes.
"I'm not meant for anonymity, Saze. For a thief, I'm really not all that good at hiding."
Sazed smiled and began to withdraw. "Sazed?" Kelsier asked, causing the terraceman to pause.
"I can't sleep. Do you have a new proposal for me?"
Sazed smiled deeply, walking into the room.
"Of course, Master Kelsier. Lately I've been thinking that you should hear about the truths of the Bennett. They fit you quite well, I think. The Bennett were a highly developed people who lived on the southern plains. They were brave seafarers and brilliant cartographers. Some of the maps the Final Empire still uses were developed by Bennett explorers. Their religion was designed to be practiced aboard ships that were away at sea for months at a time. The captain was also their minister, and no man was allowed to command unless he had received theological training."
"Probably weren't very many mutinies," Sazed smiled.
"It was a good religion, Master Kelsier. It focused on discovery and knowledge. To these people, the making of maps was a reverent duty. They believed that once all of the world was known, understood, and catalogued, men would finally find peace and harmony. Many religions teach such ideals, but few actually manage to practice them as well as the Bennett."
Kelsier frowned, leaning back against the wall beside the balcony drapes.
"Peace and harmony," he said slowly. "I'm not really looking for either right now, Saez."
"Ah," Sazed said.
Kelsier looked up, staring at the ceiling.
"Could you tell me about the Vala again?"
"Of course," Sazed said, pulling a chair over from beside Kelsier's desk and seating himself. "What specifically would you like to know?"
Kelsier shook his head.
"I'm not sure," he said. "I'm sorry, Sayes, I'm in a strange mood tonight."
"You are always in a strange mood, I think," Sayes had said with a slight smile. "However, you choose an interesting sect to ask after. The Vala lasted longer into the Lord Ruler's dominion than any other religion."
"That's why I asked," Kelsier said. "I need to understand what kept them going for so long, Sayes. What made them keep fighting?"
"They were the most determined, I think."
"But they didn't have any leaders," Kelsier said. "The Lord Ruler had slaughtered the entire Volan religious council as part of his first conquest."
"Oh, they had leaders, Master Kelsier," Sazed said. "Dead ones, true, but leaders nonetheless."
"Some men would say that their devotion didn't make sense," Kelsier said. "The loss of the Volan leaders should have broken the people, not made them more determined to keep going."
Sazed shook his head.
"Men are more resilient than that, I think. Our belief is often strongest when it should be weakest. That is the nature of hope."
Kelsier nodded.
"Do you want further instruction on the Vala?"
"No, thanks, Sayes. I just needed to be reminded that there were people who fought even when things looked hopeless."
Sayes had nodded, rising.
"I think I understand, Master Kelsier. Good evening, then."
Kelsier nodded distractedly, letting the terracemen withdraw. Most of the terracemen are not as bad as Rashik. However, I can see that they believe him to an extent. These are simple men, not philosophers or scholars, and they don't understand that their own prophecies say the Hero of Ages will be an outsider. They only see what Rashik points out, that they are an ostensibly superior people,
and should be dominant rather than subservient. Before such passion and hatred, even good men can be deceived. 30. It took returning to the Venture Ballroom to remind Vin what true majesty was. She'd visited so many keeps that she had begun to grow desensitized to the splendor. There was something special about Keep Venture, however, something that the other keeps strived for but never quite achieved. It was as if Venture were the parent and the others were well-taught children. All of the keeps were beautiful, but there was no denying which one was the finest. The enormous Venture Hall, lined by a row of massive pillars on each side, seemed even more grand than usual. Vin couldn't quite decide why. She thought about it as she waited for a servant to take her shawl. The normal limelights shone outside the stained glass windows, spraying the room with shards of light. The tables were immaculate beneath their pillared overhang. The Lord's table, set on the small balcony at the very end of the hallway, looked as regal as ever. "It's almost too perfect," Vin thought, frowning to herself. Everything seemed slightly exaggerated. The tablecloths were even whiter and pressed even flatter than usual. The servants' uniforms seemed particularly sharp. Instead of regular soldiers at the doors, haze killers stood looking intentionally impressive, distinguished by their wooden shields and lack of armor. Altogether, the room made it seem as if even the regular Venture perfection had been heightened. "Something's wrong, Sazed," she whispered as a servant moved off to prepare her table. "What do you mean, mistress?" the tall steward asked, standing behind her and to the side. "There are too many people here," Vin said, realizing one of the things that was bothering her. Ball attendance had been tapering off during the last few months, yet it seemed like everyone had returned for the Venture event, and they all wore their finest. "Something's going on," Vin said quietly. "Something we don't know about." "Yes," Sazed said quietly. "I sense it too. Perhaps I should go to the steward's dinner early." "Good idea," Vin said. "I think I might just skip the meal this evening. We're a bit late, and it looks like people have already started chatting." Sazed smiled. "What?" "I remember a time when you would never skip a meal, mistress." Vin snorted. "Just be glad I never tried to stuff my pockets with food from one of these balls. Trust me, I was tempted. Now get going." Sazed nodded and moved off toward the steward's dinner. Vin scanned the chatting groups. No sign of Shan, thankfully, she thought. Unfortunately, Cliss was nowhere to be seen either, so Vin had to choose someone else to go to for gossip. She strolled forward, smiling at Lord Idrin Cirrus, a cousin to House Illyriel, and a man she had danced with on several occasions. He acknowledged her with a stiff nod, and she joined his group. Vin smiled at the other members of the group, three women and one other lord. She knew them all at least passingly and had danced with Lord Yestel. However, this evening, all four of them gave her cold looks. "I haven't been to Keep Venture in a while," Vin said, falling into her persona as a country girl. "I'd forgotten how majestic it is."
"Indeed," said one of the ladies. "Excuse me. I'm going to go get something to drink."
"I'll go with you," one of the other ladies added, both of them leaving the group.
Vin watched them go, frowning.
"Ah," Yestel said. "Our meal has arrived. Coming, Triss?"
"Of course," the final lady said, joining Yestel as they walked away.
Idrin adjusted his spectacles, shooting Vin a half-hearted look of apology, then withdrew. Vin stood dumbfounded. She hadn't received such an obviously cold reception since her first few balls.
"What's going on?" she thought with increasing trepidation. "Is this Shan's work? Could she turn an entire room full of people against me?"
No, that didn't feel right. It would have required too much effort. In addition, the oddity wasn't just around her. All of the groups of noblemen were different this evening. Vin tried a second group with an even worse result. As soon as she joined, the members pointedly ignored her. Vin felt so out of place that she withdrew, fleeing to get herself a cup of wine. As she walked, she noticed that the first group, the one with Yestil and Idrin, had reformed with exactly the same members. Vin paused, standing just inside the shade of the eastern overhang, and scanning the crowd. There were very few people dancing, and she recognized them all as established couples. There also seemed to be very little mingling between groups or tables. While the ballroom was filled, it seemed most of the attendees were distinctly trying to ignore everyone else. "I need to get a better view of this," she thought, walking to the stairwell. A short climb later, she came out in the long corridor-like balcony set into the wall above the dance floor, its familiar blue lanterns giving the stonework a soft, melancholy hue. Vin paused. Ellen's cubbyhole sat between the rightmost column and the wall, well lit by a single lantern. He almost always spent venture balls reading there. He didn't like the pomp and ceremony that came from hosting a party. The cubbyhole was empty. She approached the railing, then craned out to look toward the far end of the grand hallway. The host's table sat on an overhang at the same level as the balconies, and she was shocked to see Elland sitting there dining with his father. "What?" she thought incredulously. Never once during the half-dozen balls she'd attended at Keep Venture had she seen Elland sit with his family. Down below, she caught sight of a familiar, colorful-robed figure moving through the crowd. She waved toward Sazed, but he had obviously already seen her. As she waited for him, Vin thought she faintly heard a familiar voice coming from the other end of the balcony. She turned and checked, noticing a short figure she'd missed before. Cliss was speaking with a small group of minor lords. "So that's where Cliss went," Vin thought. "Maybe she'll talk to me." Vin stood, waiting for either Cliss to finish her conversation or Sazed to arrive. Sazed came first, leaving the stairwell, breathing heavily. "Mistress," he said in a low voice, joining her by the railing. "Tell me you discovered something, Sazed. This ball feels creepy. Everyone's so solemn and cold. It's almost like we're at a funeral, not a party." "It is an apt metaphor, my lady," Sazed said quietly. "We have missed an important announcement. House Hastings said it is not going to hold its regular ball this week." Vin frowned. "So? Houses have cancelled balls before." "House Alariel cancelled as well. Normally Tikiel would come next, but that house is defunct. House Shuna has already announced that it won't be holding any more balls." "What are you saying?" "It appears, mistress, that this will be the last ball for a time. Perhaps a very long time." Vin glanced down at the hall's magnificent windows, which stood above the independent, almost hostile, groups of people. "That's what's going on," she said. "They're finalizing alliances. Everyone is standing with their strongest friends and supporters. They know this is the last ball, and so they all came to put in an appearance. But they know they've no time left for politicking." "It seems that way, mistress." "They're all going on the defensive," Vin said, "retreating behind their walls, so to speak. That's why no one wants to talk to me. We made Renu too neutral a force. I don't have a faction, and it's a bad time to be gambling on random political events." "Master Kelsia needs to know this information, mistress," Sazed said. "He planned on pretending to be an informant again tonight. If he's ignorant of this situation, it could seriously damage his credibility. We should leave." "No," Vin said, turning toward Sazed. "I can't go. Not when everyone else is staying. They all thought it was important to come and be seen at this last ball, and so I shouldn't leave until they start to." Sazed nodded. "Very well. You go, Sazed. Hire a carriage and go tell Kel what we've learned. I'll stay for a little longer, then leave when it won't make House Renu look weak." Sazed paused. "I don't know, mistress." Vin rolled her eyes. "I appreciate the help you've given me, but you don't need to keep holding my hand. Plenty of people come to these balls without their stewards to watch after them." Sazed sighed.
Very well, mistress. I shall return, however, after I have located Master Kelsier.
Vin nodded, bidding him farewell, and he retreated down the stone stairwell. Vin leaned against the balcony in Ellen's spot, watching until Sazed appeared below and disappeared toward the front gates.
Now what? Even if I can find someone to talk to, there's really no point in spreading rumors now.
She felt a feeling of dread. Who would have thought that she would come to enjoy noble frivolity so much? The experience was tainted by her knowledge of what many noblemen were capable of, but even still, there had been a dreamlike joy to the entire experience. Would she ever attend balls like these again? What would happen to Valette, the noblewoman? Would she have to put away her dresses and makeup and return to simply being Vin the street thief? There probably wouldn't be room for things like grand balls in Kelsier's new kingdom, and that might not be a bad thing. What right did she have to dance while other ska starved? Yet it seemed like the world would be missing something beautiful without the keeps and dancers, the dresses and the festivities. She sighed, leaning back from the railing, glancing down at her own dress. It was of a deep shimmering blue, with white circular designs sewn around the base of the skirt. It was sleeveless, but the blue silk gloves she wore ran all the way past her elbows. Once she would have found the outfit frustratingly bulky. Now, however, she found it beautifying. She liked how it was designed to make her look full through the chest, yet accentuated her thin upper torso. She liked how it flared at the waist, slowly fanning out into a wide bell that rustled as she walked. She'd miss it. She'd miss it all. But Sazed was right. She couldn't stop the progression of time. She could only enjoy the moment.
I'm not going to let him sit up there at the high table all evening and ignore me, she decided.
Vin turned and walked along the balcony, nodding to Cliss as she passed. The balcony ended in a corridor that turned and, as Vin had correctly guessed, led out onto the ledge that held the host's table. She stood inside the corridor for a moment, looking out. Lords and ladies sat in regal outfits, basking in the privilege of being invited up to sit with Lord Straff Venture. Vin waited, trying to get Ellen's attention, and finally one of the guests noticed her, then nudged Ellen. He turned with surprise, saw Vin, then flushed slightly. She waved briefly, and he stood, excusing himself. Vin ducked back into the stone corridor a bit so they could speak more privately.
"Elland," she said as he walked into the corridor, "you're sitting with your father."
He nodded. "This ball has turned into something of a special event, Valette, and my father was fairly insistent that I obey protocol."
"When are we going to have time to talk?"
Elland paused. "I'm not sure that we will." Vin frowned. He seemed reserved. His usual slightly worn and wrinkled suit had been replaced by a sharp, well-fitted one. His hair was even combed.
"Elland,"
she said, stepping forward. He raised a hand, warding her back. "Things have changed, Valette."
"No," she thought. "This can't change. Not yet." "Things? What things? Elland, what are you talking about?"
"I am heir to House Venture," he said, "and dangerous times are coming. House Hastings lost an entire convoy this afternoon, and that's only the beginning. Within the month, the keeps will openly be at war. These aren't things I can ignore, Valette. It's time I stopped being a liability to my family."
"That's fine," Vin said. "That doesn't mean..."
"Valette," Ellen interrupted. "You are a liability, too. A very big one. I won't lie and claim that I never cared for you. I did, and I still do. However, I knew from the start, as you did, that this could never be anything more than a passing dalliance. The truth is, my house needs me, and it's more important than you are." Vin paled.
"But..."
He turned to go back to dinner.
"Elland,"
she said quietly,
"please don't turn away from me."
He paused, then looked back at her. "I know the truth, Valette. I know how you've lied about who you are. I don't care, really.
I'm not angry or even disappointed. The truth is, I expected it. You're just playing the game, like we all are. He paused, then shook his head and turned away from her. Like I am.
Ellen,
she said, reaching for him. Don't make me embarrass you in public, Villette. Vin paused, feeling numb. And then she was too angry to be numb. Too angry, too frustrated, and too terrified.
Don't leave,
she whispered.
Don't you leave me, too.
I'm sorry, he said, but I have to go meet with my friends. It was fun. And he left. Vin stood in the darkened corridor. She felt herself shiver quietly, and she turned to stumble back out onto the main balcony. To the side, she could see Ellen bid good evening to his family, then head through a back corridor toward the Keep's living section.
He can't do this to me. Not Ellen. Not now.
However, a voice from within, a voice she had nearly forgotten, began to speak.
Of course he left you, Reen whispered. Of course he abandoned you. Everyone will betray you, Vin. What did I teach you?
No, she thought. It's just the political tension. Once this is over, I'll be able to convince him to come back.
I never came back for you, Reen whispered. He won't either.
The voice felt so real. It was almost like she could hear him beside her. Vin leaned up against the balcony railing, using the iron grating for strength, holding herself up. She wouldn't let him destroy her. A life on the streets hadn't been able to break her. She wouldn't let a self-important nobleman do so. She just kept telling herself that. But why did this hurt so much more than starvation? So much more than one of Cayman's beatings?
Well, Villette Renew,
a voice said from behind.
Cliss, Vin said. I'm not in the mood to talk right now.
Ah, Cliss said. So Ellen Venture finally spurned you. Don't worry, child. He'll get what he deserves shortly.
Vin turned, frowning at the odd tone in Cliss's voice. The woman didn't seem like herself. She seemed too controlled.
Deliver a message to your uncle for me, will you, dear? Cliss asked lightly. Tell him that a man such as himself, without house alliances, might have a difficult time gathering intelligence in the upcoming months. If he needs a good source of information, tell him to send for me. I know lots of interesting things.
You're an informant,
Vin said, pushing aside her pain for the moment.
But you're a foolish gossip?
The short woman asked.
Why, yes, I am. It's fascinating the kinds of things you can learn when you're known as the court gossip. People come to you to spread obvious lies, such as the things you told me about House Hastings last week. Why would you want me to spread such untruths? Could House Renew be making a bid for the weapons market during the House War? Indeed, could House Renew be behind the recent attack on the Hastings barges?
Cliss's eyes twinkled.
Tell your uncle that I can be made to keep quiet about what I know, for a small fee.
You've been duping me all along,
Vin said numbly.
Of course, dear, Cliss said, patting Vin's arm. That's what we do here at court. You'll learn eventually, if you survive. Now be a good child and deliver my message, all right?
Cliss turned, her squat, gaudy dress suddenly seeming a brilliant costume to Vin.
Wait, Vin said. What was that you said about Ellen earlier? He's going to get what he deserves?
Hmm? Cliss said, turning. Why, that's right. You've been asking after Shan Illyrio's plans, haven't you?
Shan?
Vin thought with rising concern.
What is she planning?
Now that, my dear, is an expensive secret indeed. I could tell you, but then what would I have in return? A woman of an unimportant house like myself needs to find sustenance somewhere.
Vin pulled off her sapphire necklace, the only piece of jewelry she was wearing.
Here, take it.
Cliss accepted the necklace with a thoughtful expression.
Yes, very nice indeed.
What do you know? Vin snapped.
Young Elland is going to be one of the first venture casualties in the house war, I'm afraid, Cliss said, stuffing the necklace into a sleeve pocket. It's unfortunate. He really does seem like a nice boy. Too nice, probably.
When? Vin demanded. Where? How?
So many questions, but only one necklace, Cliss said idly.
It's all I have right now, Vin said truthfully. Her coin pouch contained only bronze clips for steel pushing.
But it's a very valuable secret, as I've said, Cliss continued. By telling you, my own life would be...
That's it, Vin thought furiously. Stupid aristocratic games. Vin burned zinc and brass, hitting Cliss with a powerful blast of emotional allomancy. She soothed away all of the woman's feelings but fear, then took hold of that fear and yanked on it with a firm tug.
"Tell me,"
Vin growled. Cliss gasped, wobbling and nearly falling to the ground.
"An allomancer? No wonder Renu brought such a distant cousin with him to Luthadel."
"Speak," Vin said, taking a step forward.
"You're too late to help him," Cliss said. "I'd never sell a secret like this if it had a chance of turning on me."
"Tell me!"
"He'll be assassinated by Illyrial Allomancers this evening," Cliss whispered. "He might be dead already. It was supposed to happen as soon as he withdrew from the Lord's Table. But if you want revenge, you'll have to look toward Lord Straff Venture, too."
"Ellen's father?" Vin asked with surprise.
"Of course, foolish child," Cliss said. "Lord Venture would love nothing more than an excuse to give the house title to his nephew instead." All Venture had to do was withdraw a few of his soldiers from the rooftop around young Ellen's room to let in the Illyrial assassins. And since the assassination will occur during one of Ellen's little philosophy meetings, Lord Venture will be able to rid himself of a Hastings and a Lecal, too.
Vin spun. I have to do something.
Of course, Cliss said with a chuckle, standing up. Lord Venture is in for a surprise himself. I've heard that your Elland has some very choice books in his possession. Young Venture should be much more careful about the things he tells his women, I think.
Vin turned back to the smiling Cliss. The woman winked at him.
I'll keep your allomancy a secret, child. Just make certain I get payment by tomorrow afternoon. A lady must buy food, and as you can see... I need a lot of it. As for House Venture, well, I'd distance myself from them if I were you. Shan's assassins are going to make quite the disturbance tonight. I wouldn't be surprised if half the court ended up in the boys' room to see what the ruckus was about. When the court sees those books Elland has, well, let's just say that the obligators are going to become very interested in House Venture for a time. Too bad Elland will already be dead. We haven't had an open execution of a nobleman in quite some time.
Elland's room, Vin thought desperately. That's where they must be. She turned, holding the sides of her dress, and rustling frantically down the balcony walkway toward the corridor she had left moments before.
Where are you going? Cliss asked with surprise.
I have to stop this, Vin said. Cliss laughed.
I already told you that you're too late. Venture is a very old keep, and the back passages leading to the Lord's quarters are quite the maze. If you don't know your way, you'll end up lost for hours.
Vin glanced around, feeling helpless.
Besides, child, Cliss added, turning to walk away, didn't the boy just spurn you? What do you owe him?
Vin paused. She's right. What do I owe him? The answer came immediately.
I love him.
With that thought came strength. Vin rushed forward despite Cliss's laughter.
She had to try. She entered the corridor and moved into the back passageways. However, Cliss's words soon proved true. The darkstone passageways were narrow and unadorned. She'd never find her way in time.
The roof, she thought. Ellen's rooms will have an outside balcony. I need a window.
She dashed down a passage, kicking off her shoes and pulling off her stockings, then running as best she could in the dress. She searched frantically for a window big enough to fit through. She burst out into a larger corridor, empty save for flickering torches. A massive lavender rose window stood on the far side of the room.
Good enough, Vin thought.
With a flare of steel, she threw herself into the air, pushing against a massive iron door behind her. She flew forward for a moment, then pushed powerfully against the rose window's iron bindings. She lurched to a stop in the air, pushing both backward and forward at the same time. She strained, hanging in the empty corridor, flaring her pewter to keep from being crushed. The rose window was enormous, but it was mostly glass. How strong could it be? Very strong. Vin groaned beneath the strain. She heard a snap behind her, and the door began to twist in its mountings.
You must give, she thought angrily, flaring her steel.
Chips of stone fell around the window. Then, with a crack of sound, the rose window burst free from the stone wall. It fell backward into the dark night, and Vin shot out behind it. Cool mist enveloped her. She pulled slightly against the door inside the room, keeping herself from going out too far, then pushed mightily against the falling window. The enormous, dark-glassed window tumbled beneath her, churning the mists as Vin shot away from it, straight up toward the roof. The window crashed to the ground just as Vin flew up over the edge of the rooftop, her dress fluttering madly in the wind. She landed on the bronze-plated roof with a thump, falling to a crouch. The metal was cool beneath her toes and fingers. Tin flared, illuminating the night. She could see nothing out of the ordinary. She burned bronze, using it as Marsh had taught her, searching for signs of allomancy. There weren't any. The assassins had a smoker with them.
I can't search the entire building, Vin thought, desperately flaring her bronze. Where are they?
Then, oddly, she thought she sensed something. An allomantic pulse in the night. Faint. Hidden. But enough. Vin rose to dash across the rooftop, trusting her instincts. As she ran, she flared pewter and grabbed her dress near the neck, then ripped the garment down the front with a single yank. She pulled her coin pouch and metal vials from a hidden pocket, and then, still running, she ripped the dress, petticoats, and attached leggings free, tossing it all aside. Her corset and gloves went next. Underneath, she wore a thin, sleeveless white shift and a pair of white shorts. She dashed frantically.
I can't be late, she thought. Please, I can't.
Figures resolved in the mists ahead. They stood beside an angled rooftop skylight. Vin had passed several similar ones as she ran. One of the figures pointed toward the skylight, a weapon glittering in its hand. Vin cried out, pushing herself off the bronze roof in an arcing jump. She landed in the very center of the surprised group of people, then thrust her coin pouch upward, ripping it in two. Coins sprayed into the air, reflecting light from the window below. As the glistening shower of metal fell around Vin, she pushed. Coins zipped away from her like a swarm of insects, each one leaving a trail in the mist. Figures cried out as coins hit flesh and several of the dark forms dropped. Several did not. Some of the coins snapped away, pushed aside by invisible allomantic hands. Four people remained standing. Two of them wore mist cloaks. One of them was familiar. Shan Ilariel. Vin didn't need to see the cloak to understand. There was only one reason a woman as important as Shan would come as an assassin like this. She was a Mistborn.
You?
Shan asked in shock. She wore a black outfit of trousers and shirt, her dark hair pulled back, her mist cloak worn almost stylishly.
Two Mistborn, Vin thought. Not good.
She scrambled away, ducking as one of the assassins swung a dueling cane at her. Vin slid across the rooftop, then pulled herself to a brief halt, spinning with one hand resting against the cold bronze. She reached out and pulled against the few coins that hadn't escaped out into the night, yanking them back into her hand.
Kill her!
Shan snapped. The two men Vin had felled lay groaning on the rooftop. They weren't dead. In fact, one was climbing unsteadily to his feet.
Thugs, Vin thought. The other two are probably coin shots.
As if to prove her right, one of the men tried to push away Vin's vial of metals. Fortunately, there weren't enough metals in the vial to give him a very good anchor, and she kept hold of it easily. Shan turned her attention back to the skylight.
No, you don't,
Vin thought, dashing forward again. The coin shot cried out as she approached. Vin flipped a coin and shot it at him. He, of course, pushed back, but Vin anchored herself against the bronze roof and flared steel, pushing with a firm effort. The man's own steel push, transmitted from the coin to Vin to the roof, launched him out into the air. He cried out, shooting off into the darkness. He was only a misting and couldn't pull himself back to the rooftop. The other coin shot tried to spray Vin with coins, but she deflected them with ease. Unfortunately, he wasn't as foolish as his companion, and he released the coins soon after pushing them. However, it was obvious that he couldn't hit her.
Why did he keep the other mistborn?
Vin thought, ducking to a roll as a figure leaped from the dark mists, glass knives flashing in the air. Vin just barely got out of the way, flaring pewter to give herself balance. She came to her feet beside the wounded thug, who stood on obviously weak legs. With another flare of pewter, Vin slammed her shoulder into the man's chest, shoving him to the side. The man stumbled maladroitly, still holding his bleeding side. Then he tripped and fell right into the skylight. The fine tinted glass shattered as he fell, and Vin's tin-enhanced ears could hear cries of surprise from below, followed by a crash as the thug hit the ground. Vin looked up, smiling evilly at the stunned Shan. Behind her, the second mistborn, a man, swore quietly.
You,
Shan sputtered, her eyes flaring dangerously with anger in the night.
Take the warning, Elend, Vin thought, and escape. It's time for me to go.
She couldn't face two mistborn at once. She couldn't even beat Kelsier most nights. Flaring steel, Vin launched herself backward. Shan took a step forward and, looking determined, pushed herself after Vin. The second mistborn joined her.
Bloody hell,
Vin thought, spinning in the air and pulling herself to the rooftop's edge near where she had broken the rose window. Below, figures scrambled about, lanterns brightening the mists. Lord Venture probably thought that the fuss meant his son was dead. He was in for a surprise. Vin launched herself into the air again, jumping out into the misty void. She could hear the two mistborn land behind her, then push off as well.
This isn't good, Vin thought with trepidation, as she hurled through the misty air currents.
She didn't have any coins left, nor did she have daggers, and she faced two trained mistborn. She burned iron, searching frantically for an anchor in the night. A line of blue, moving slowly, appeared beneath her to the right. Vin yanked on the line, changing her trajectory. She shot downward, the Venture ground's wall appearing as a dark shadow beneath her. Her anchor was the breastplate of an unfortunate guard who lay atop the wall, holding frantically to a tooth in the battlements to keep himself from being pulled upward toward Vin. Vin slammed feet first into the man, then spun in the misty air, flipping to land on the cool stone. The guard collapsed to the stone, then cried out, desperately grabbing his stone anchor as another allomantic force pulled against him.
Sorry, friend, Vin thought, kicking the man's hand free from the battlement tooth.
He immediately snapped upward, yanked into the air as if pulled by a powerful tether. The sound of bodies colliding sounded from the darkness above, and Vin saw a pair of forms drop limply to the Venture courtyard. Vin smiled, dashing along the wall.
I sure hope that was Shan.
Vin jumped up, landing atop the gatehouse. Near the keep, people were scattering, climbing in carriages to flee.
And so the house war starts, Vin thought. Didn't think I'd be the one to officially begin it.
A figure plummeted toward her from the mists above. Vin cried out, flaring pewter and jumping to the side. Shan landed dexterously, mist-cloaked tassels billowing, atop the gatehouse. She had both daggers out, and her eyes burned with anger. Vin jumped to the side, rolling off the gatehouse and landing on the wall-top below. A pair of guards jumped back in alarm, surprised to see a half-naked girl fall into their midst.
Shan dropped to the wall behind them, then pushed, throwing one of the guards in Vin's direction. The man cried out as Vin pushed against his breastplate as well. But he was far heavier than she, and she was thrown backward. She pulled on the guard to slow herself, and the man crashed down to the wall top. Vin landed lithely beside him, then grabbed his staff as it rolled free from his hand. Shan attacked in a flash of spinning daggers, and Vin was forced to jump backward again. "She's so good," Vin thought with anxiety. Vin herself had barely trained with daggers. Now she wished she'd asked Kelsier for a little more practice. She swung the staff, but she'd never used one of the weapons before, and her attack was laughable. Shan slashed, and Vin felt a flare of pain in her cheek as she dodged. She dropped the staff in shock, reaching up to her face and feeling blood. She stumbled back, seeing the smile on Shan's face. And then Vin remembered the vial, the one she still carried, the one Kelsier had given her. Atium. She didn't bother to grab it from the place she had tucked it at her waist. She burned steel, pushing it out into the air in front of her. Then she immediately burned iron and yanked on the bead of atium. The vial shattered, the bead heading back toward Vin. She caught it in her mouth, swallowing the lump and forcing it down. Shan paused. Then, before Vin could do anything, she downed a vial of her own. Of course she has atium. But how much did she have? Kelsier hadn't given Vin much, only enough for about 30 seconds. Shan jumped forward, smiling, her long black hair flaring in the air. Vin gritted her teeth. She didn't have much choice. She burned atium. Immediately, Shan's form shot forth dozens of phantom atium shadows. It was a mistborn standoff. The first one who ran out of atium would be vulnerable. You couldn't escape an opponent who knew exactly what you were going to do. Vin scrambled backward, keeping an eye on Shan. The noblewoman stalked forward, her phantoms forming an insane bubble of translucent motion around her. She seemed calm, secure. She has plenty of atium, Vin thought, feeling her own storage burn away. I need to get away. A shadowy length of wood suddenly shot through Vin's chest. She ducked to the side just as the real arrow, apparently made with no arrowhead, passed through the air where she had been standing. She glanced toward the gatehouse where several soldiers were raising bows. She cursed, glancing to the side, into the mists. As she did so, she caught a smile from Shan. She's just waiting for my atium to burn out. She wants me to run. She knows she can chase me down. There was only one other option. Attack. Shan frowned in surprise as Vin dashed forward, phantom arrows snapping against the stones just before their real counterparts arrived. Vin dodged between two arrows, her atium-enhanced mind knowing exactly how to move, passing so close that she could feel the missiles in the air to either side of her. Shan swung her daggers, and Vin twisted to the side, dodging one slice and blocking the other with her forearm, earning a deep gash. Her own blood flew in the air as she spun, each droplet tossing out a translucent atium image, and flared pewter, punching Shan square in the stomach. Shan grunted in pain, bending slightly, but she didn't fall. Atium's almost gone, Vin thought desperately. Only a few seconds left. So she extinguished her atium early, exposing herself. Shan smiled wickedly, coming up from her crouch, right-hand dagger swinging confidently. She assumed that Vin had run out of atium, and therefore assumed that she was exposed, vulnerable. At that moment, Vin burned her last bit of atium. Shan paused just briefly in confusion, giving Vin an opening as a phantom arrow streaked through the mists overhead. Vin caught the real arrow as it followed, the grainy wood burning her fingers, then rammed it down into Shan's chest. The shaft snapped in Vin's hand, leaving about an inch protruding from Shan's body. The woman stumbled backward, staying on her feet. Damn pewter, Vin thought, ripping a sword from a sheath beside the unconscious soldier at her feet. She jumped forward, gritting her teeth in determination, and Shan, still dazed, raised a hand to push against the sword. Vin let the weapon go, It was just a distraction, as she slammed the second half of the broken arrow into Shan's chest, just beside its counterpart. This time, Shan dropped. She tried to rise, but one of the shafts must have done some serious damage to her heart, for her face paled. She struggled for a moment, then fell lifeless to the stones. Vin stood, breathing deeply as she wiped the blood from her cheek, only to realize that her bloody arm was just making her face worse. Behind her, the soldiers called out, knocking more arrows. Vin glanced back toward the keep, bidding farewell to Elland, then pushed herself out into the night. Other men worry whether or not they will be remembered. I have no such fears. Even disregarding the terrorist prophecies, I have brought such chaos, conflict, and hope to this world that there is little chance that I will be forgotten. I worry about what they will say of me. Historians can make what they wish of the past. In 1,000 years' time, will I be remembered as the man who protected mankind from a powerful evil? Or will I be remembered as a tyrant who arrogantly tried to make himself a legend? 31.
I don't know, Kelsier said, smiling as he shrugged. Breeze would make a pretty good minister of sanitation.
The group chuckled, though Breeze just rolled his eyes.
Honestly, I don't see why I consistently prove to be the target of you people's humor. Why must you choose the only dignified person in this crew as the butt of your mockery?
Because, my dear man, Ham said, imitating Breeze's accent, you are, by far, the best butt we have.
Oh, please, Breeze said as Spook nearly collapsed to the floor with laughter. This is just getting juvenile. The teenage boy was the only one who found that comment amusing, Hammond.
I'm a soldier, Ham said, raising his cup. Your witty verbal attacks have no effect on me, for I am far too dense to understand them.
Kelsier chuckled, leaning back against the cupboard. One problem with working at night was that he missed the evening gatherings in Clubs's kitchen. Breeze and Ham continued their general banter. Docs sat at the end of the table, going over ledgers and reports, while Spook sat by Ham eagerly, trying his best to take part in the conversation. Clubs sat in his corner, overseeing, occasionally smiling, and generally enjoying his ability to give the best scowls in the room.
"I should be leaving, Master Kelsier," Sazed said, checking the wall clock. "Mistress Vin should be about ready to leave."
Kelsier nodded.
"I should get going myself. I still have to—"
The outside kitchen door slammed open. Vin stood silhouetted by the dark mist, wearing nothing but her dressing undergarments, a flimsy white shirt and shorts. Both were sprayed with blood.
"Vin!"
Ham exclaimed, standing. Her cheek bore a long, thin gash, and she had a bandage tied on one forearm.
"I'm fine," she said wearily.
"What happened to your dress?"
Doxon immediately demanded.
"You mean this?"
Vin asked apologetically, holding up a ripped, soot-stained blue mass of cloth.
"It got in the way. Sorry, Dox."
"Lord Ruler Girl," Breeze said. "Forget the dress. What happened to you?"
Vin shook her head, shutting the door. Spook blushed furiously at her outfit, and Sazed immediately moved over, checking the wound on her cheek.
"I think I did something bad," Vin said.